Welcome to the ETAP Podcast, a service of the American Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials. Each month, we'll provide information and insight into environmental issues important to state transportation officials. Thanks so much for joining us on AASHTO's ETAP Podcast. I'm your host, Bernie Wagenblast. Wildlife vehicle collisions are a challenge in states across the country, causing about 1 to 2 million large animal impacts, such as deer, injuring 26,000 people, causing 200 deaths, and resulting in $8 billion in property damage. As a result, the Federal Highway Administration launched the Wildlife Crossing Program, authorizing $350 million for wildlife crossing projects to reduce vehicle-wildlife collisions and improve habitat connectivity. The Wildlife Crossing Program is one of many initiatives proposed by the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law. This project will be accomplished by funding construction, non-construction projects, research, planning, and design projects to increase animal safety on roads. In the meantime, the Oregon Department of Transportation has set forth successful wildlife crossings, decreasing 86% of wildlife vehicle collisions. Joining us today to talk about how they did it is Sydney Bowman, Wildlife Passage Program Coordinator with the Oregon Department of Transportation. Sydney, welcome to AASHTO's ETAP Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we're going to be talking, obviously, about wildlife crossings in the state of Oregon. But outside of what I talked about briefly in the introduction, maybe you can give us a little better idea about what your work involves and how you go about it, if you would, please.
Yeah, so I work as ODOT's Wildlife Passage Coordinator. And currently that is an unfunded program within ODOT. So a lot of what I do is education outreach to landowners and to state, federal, local agency partners. I serve on ODOT project teams trying to incorporate wildlife passage into projects when and where it makes sense. And then I oversee any monitoring that those projects, when they actually do incorporate wildlife passage into the projects.
Obviously, just don't go put a wildlife crossing any old place. You have to do some research. There has to be some need for something like that. Tell me a little bit about the process of how they determine where these crossings are going to be placed.
Sure. So we have a really great data set from our maintenance crews. So they record location and species anytime they pick up a carcass from the highway. So we have about 10 years worth of data of where animals are being struck. So it's a really helpful data set to know where there's a high density of certain species on ODOT highways. The majority are deer, but we also have other species like elk, bear, cougar. So that's where usually our starting point is to look at those high density collision areas. We also depend on our Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife partners. They typically have a very good idea if they've had collared studies in the area. They can help provide that information about where animals are trying to cross or where they're being hit. Or where populations are in serious decline. So one thing our data set, our maintenance crew data set does not provide is information on smaller critters. So we don't have a good idea of where small mammals are getting struck. And it also doesn't tell us which stretches of highway are already a barrier to movement. So we don't know where animals are crossing successfully and where they're just not even trying to cross anymore.
You mentioned a good part of your job involves outreach. Tell us a little bit more about that part of it and what kind of reactions you get as you do that outreach.
We work with a local nonprofit called Protect Animal Migration. And we'll have, prior to the pandemic, we had some film festivals and public outreach events where we can show some local films on projects and just share information on the issue of wildlife vehicle collisions and wildlife passage and provide tips to landowners about simple things they can do to help wildlife move successfully where they need to go. So it's been a great response. Living in Central Oregon, people tend to see a lot of wildlife in the area. So they think that there's not a problem, but they don't understand that those animals need to migrate to survive. And there are things they can do to help them to complete their life pathways.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine there's really just two basic types of wildlife crossings that you're involved with, those that go under the roadway and perhaps those that go above the roadway. Is that correct? Is that the mix that you've got there? And how do you determine which type you're going to use?
Yeah, so in Oregon, we actually only have undercrossings. So we have not had any overcrossings built yet. And that's mainly due to cost. And there's just a very significant cost difference between the two. So we've been fortunate enough to build a handful of undercrossings, mainly bridges, but there's also a location in the western part of the state where it's just a large culvert. So the majority have been undercrossings, just mainly due to cost.
One of the things I noticed, I was looking at a video about some of the work that you do, and it's not just building this undercrossing under the roadway, but also some fencing, wildlife fencing, so that the animals get funneled into that and don't decide that they're going to do a little bit of jaywalking where they're not supposed to be.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a really critical part. Otherwise, you're just relying on animals to find the crossing structures on their own, which can take a long time. So the fencing kind of speeds that process up, directs and funnels them to those crossing structures. So yes, the fence is a really critical piece because it also keeps the animals off the highway in those areas where the fencing is installed. So it's a win-win.
Once you've installed one of these crossings, is there some sort of evaluation to see how effective it has been so you can have some data that you can point to and show folks that, yeah, this does make a difference?
Yes, we typically install game cameras in and around the project areas to really get a good sense of how animals are using the structures. So we'll use them to determine if animals are approaching and if they're passing through comfortably, if they approach and then turn around. We look at fence ends to see how they're behaving at the end of the fence. And then also different other features. If we have deer guards or jump outs, we like to see how they're using those features. And then we also use our maintenance wildlife vehicle collision data set. So we look to see if there's a decrease in the number of carcasses that are being collected, both within the project area and adjacent to the project.
Now, obviously, wildlife crossing a busy highway is very dangerous for the wildlife, but there's also a significant danger for motorists as well. Do you have some information about the danger that they present to drivers and passengers?
Yeah, absolutely. You're exactly right. People can hit wildlife and it can cause significant damage to their vehicles. It can send them to the hospital. There's time off of work. And unfortunately, can also result in death. So as a Department of Transportation employee, we're very focused on driver safety. So that's definitely the DOT's major motivation for building these structures and installing the fencing. In Oregon, we tend to have most of our collisions are with mule deer, which don't tend to cause fatalities, but can. But we also do have elk, which obviously, if you hit an elk, it's going to result in some serious damage.
You talked about the smaller critters. Now, I'm sure that they use those crossings, but I don't know if you're talking about in terms of smaller critters, possum, raccoons, squirrels, things of that sort. Is there anything that can be done short of creating an underpass for those types of animals to discourage them from trying to cross a busy highway?
Yeah, so you're right that when we construct these structures, they're typically designed for larger species like mule deer and elk, but they do benefit a wide range of species, both the species you mentioned, but also others like birds, bobcats, cougars, bears. So there really is a wide range of benefits beyond just the intended species. We are looking at doing some crossing structures for smaller animals. For instance, up in the Portland area, they're looking at doing a frog crossing structure to pass underneath a busy highway. And then we're also looking at doing a project for coastal marten, which is a listed species now along 101 along the Oregon coast. So yes, these features and structures can be scaled to size for appropriate in different species.
With your cameras and such, do you find that humans are using any of these underpasses? I'm thinking, you know, people who are maybe hiking or hunters and folks like that.
Absolutely. And after a 2-year study of our first crossing structure, we found that humans were the fourth most common species. So we do have a lot of use. Central Oregon is known as a recreation haven. So we see a lot of people horseback riding, hiking, biking. We had one person that set some traps up at the crossing structure trying to catch some animals. So it has been a problem because it has also led to vandalism of our cameras. And then we're also concerned that long-term you're affecting species use. So right now the species, mostly deer, will move during the day and night, but as more people use the structures, that use can turn to just night use. So there is some concern that over time that could become more of a problem.
I would imagine when many of these highways were built, there wasn't necessarily the data or even necessarily the focus on wildlife and what that means. I'm not sure where Oregon stands as far as building any new roadways, but now does that play a much bigger role in terms of trying to determine where animals are migrating and the types of places they might go in terms of how and where these highways are designed?
That's a good question. We're not, ODOT isn't building a lot of new highways. There was one built maybe 10 years ago between Corvallis and the Oregon coast. And as part of that project, they did install a large culvert for elk passage. But as far as I know, I think there's no money and no plans for larger new highways, but they are looking at expanding highways. So for instance, US 97 that runs from the Washington to California border is mostly a two-lane highway, but in sections, they have expanded it to a four-lane divided highway. And that's where we've been able to incorporate wildlife passage structures during that construction process, since it's much more cost-effective to piggyback onto an existing project than to do a standalone. Yes, I think wildlife passages being more considered as part of projects, it's just they're tremendously expensive and there's already so many other factors that are having to be considered in projects. The overall cost of projects have just increased so much that it's still challenging to get the money to incorporate wildlife passage into projects.
For those projects that you've been involved with, what are some of the things that you and Oregon DOT have learned from these projects that you might be able to incorporate into future projects?
Sure. So we've certainly been able to benefit from some designs. Our jump outs, which are ramps that go from the highway side to the forested side, allow animals to escape. If they find their way onto the highway, they're able to jump out and get back into the forested side. So we've certainly learned from some designs that there are better ways to do that. We're also learning about how to increase use with adding what we call furniture. So adding large logs and rocks and things like that to provide cover for the smaller species. And then also those can tend to deter more human use. So if we can place some large boulders in and around a structure, it can prevent people from driving through with their ATVs or maybe not coming through as much as they would have otherwise. So we've certainly benefited from design. And we've also learned how to work with our partners better, how to identify projects early, how to do some basic design ahead of time so that it's more apt to get included in a project later on.
Now, I would imagine you are learning from other state DOTs and other state DOTs are learning from you. What are some of the lessons that you've learned that you share with other states? And what have you picked up from other states that maybe you think about incorporating in Oregon?
Yeah, so Oregon has been a late adopter of wildlife passage into projects. So it's definitely more of us learning from other states, but we have been able to work with them to get ideas for project design. And certainly now that we're actually in the design process for some overcrossings, we're using those other states' engineers to help our engineers with just basic design features. You know, how do you deal with the weight of the soil on the bridge and how do you do plantings and things like that? So we've definitely been on the receiving end of a lot of good advice, which is great.
We talked a little earlier about some of the public engagement. This is an element of public engagement, but maybe a little bit different in terms of the PR side of it, trying to encourage folks to be supportive of what you're trying to do, to educate them to what you're trying to do. What are some of the things that go into that? And how do you do that outreach? Does it involve the media? Does it involve personal meetings? All of the above?
Yeah, I think definitely a wide range. We've tried to experiment because it's an unfunded program. We do invite the media out frequently to projects when they're being constructed and being monitored. They love seeing the photos from the cameras of animals using the structures, and it always makes a good story. I think for ODOT, it's usually a win-win for the most part. We've also, we have some posters and flyers in all of our state offices. So we have posters in our DMVs so that when people are coming to renew their license, you know, that's kind of a captive driver audience. So we'll have posters on the issue of wildlife vehicle collisions and with some driver tips that they can use to avoid hitting an animal. We try and incorporate a wildlife passage into local events. So if there's a science fair, we'll try and have a booth there. In the summer, there's lots of different events. Outdoor Backcountry Anglers and Hunters and Anglers has a big event we have a table at. And then we also try to work with our local High Desert Museum. They had an exhibit on wildlife vehicle collisions. So we provide them some information and provide tours whenever anyone's interested in seeing the actual structures.
While these crossings obviously can make a big difference, both for animals and for humans in terms of them getting safely across the roadways, there are still places where they're going to cross despite your best efforts. I think we're all familiar with those signs that you see on the side of the roadway that will say wildlife crossing and maybe specify even what type of wildlife, but it might say for the next 17 miles. And needless to say, your mind starts to wonder as you're going those 17 miles, what are some of the things that can be done or are being done to help protect both the wildlife and the humans for those places where a wildlife crossing maybe isn't fiscally possible or physically possible?
Yeah, it's a good question. So we do have our VMS signs that we turn on seasonally. You're right. People have that sign fatigue. You tend to ignore it. If you don't see an animal, you're like, there's no animals here. So we have been using our VMS signs that we'll turn on seasonally. So an hour before and after dawn and dusk to avoid that sign fatigue. So just letting the animal during the migration season also. So we'll turn those signs on. It's a different message, hoping in hopes of getting people, drivers' attention. In Central Oregon, we have a 100-mile stretch where mule deer migrate twice a year. And the best we can do at this point is to have that driver education. I think there's hopes that some of the driver technology, these new vehicles that have all these fancy sensors, at some point will provide some assistance with that as well. But it's really just letting the driver know to be aware, especially those critical times of day that wildlife are moving on the highway.
With this work that you've done, do you have a particular favorite crossing of yours and what makes it special if you do?
Yeah, I think probably the Lava Butte crossing, the first one that ODOT built, is probably near and dear just because we've seen it evolve from just nothing to a crossing structure and just seeing the animals use them. It's like Christmas when you open up the disc of all the photos. So it's fun to see the different animals use the structures. Just the surprise of the variety. Still hoping to catch a wolf on camera. I haven't seen any of those yet. For instance, recently we saw a mother nursing her fawn in the undercrossing and saw a cougar at 10 in the morning. So that was pretty exciting.
Anything else that you've seen on these cameras or in your experience with the crossings that's been a surprise?
I think just the amount of human use was really shocking. Humans are interesting animals too.
And finally, any words of wisdom that you might share with other state DOTs in terms of how they can best implement their wildlife crossing program funds?
Yeah, well, I think what I've learned and been most surprised about is our partnerships with our nonprofits. So we have a really strong partnership with the Oregon Hunters Association. They've actually helped fundraise large amounts of money to help us get projects built. We also have a strong partnership with the Oregon Wildlife Foundation. They created a license plate called Watch for Wildlife license plate that a portion of the funds go to wildlife passage projects. So really working with the local nonprofits has been a huge benefit. They've lobbied our legislature and were able to get some legislative directives passed that requires ODOT to do more for wildlife passage. And also they were able to get a $7 million one-time fund to ODOT for wildlife passage. So I would just encourage that working with the local nonprofit partners can be a huge benefit to getting both recognition and funding.
Our guest on this episode of AASHTO's ETAP podcast has been Sydney Bowman. She is the Wildlife Passage Program Coordinator with the Oregon Department of Transportation. Sydney, thanks so much for being my guest.
Thank you.